Welcome to the Productivity Podcast. Absolute pleasure today to be joined by Ken Hughes, who I've seen speak on a number of occasions at events. Ken's a keynote speaker. Morning, Ken. How are you doing?
I'm very good, Simon. How are you keeping?
Very well, considering, and delighted that we're nearer the end than we are the start of this horrible kind of 18 months that's engulfed the world.
Are we? As someone said recently, I see the light at the end of the tunnel, but what if the light is a train?
Or based on today's news, it could be a big cargo ship stuck in the sea.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see. So for those that may have not seen you speak, Ken, looked at your YouTube channel, just give us a bit of background about yourself and how you got to kind of being the social scientist and keynote speaker that you are today.
Yeah. So, as you said, I'm a social scientist. I'm fascinated by humans, by particularly consumer psychology, how we buy, why we buy, looking at the hopes and dreams of consumers and society and economies. I've been looking at that for 21 years now. I ran a research company for a long time. And then I started speaking on the international conference circuit, and that's where I spend most of my time now, obviously virtually these days, kind of challenging, disrupting thoughts and inspiring various audiences globally to think about the new ways of working, new business models, new consumers, new ways of staying relevant. So obviously the pandemic has been like a wonderful gift to me. Like any anthropologist or anyone interested in psychology has been waking up every morning for the last 13 or 14 months, rubbing their hands gleefully thinking, oh, what's changed today? Because I mean, we generally don't have, people liken it to World War II, but World War II didn't affect every single country. There was a huge parts of the population that weren't hugely affected by the war. Whereas this is the first time, no matter what age, creed, social class, color, religion, political, geography, everything, no matter who you are, you're affected by this. And it's a really interesting societal shift watching some of the trends that have been emerging over the last 10 years anyway, either be step jumped significantly or else being reconsidered and the more simpler things being, so I think the way this is going to play out across how we live, how we work, who we are as a people is going to be really interesting.
Yeah. It's been fascinating as a kind of bystander watching really our world, hospitality, retail, how that's all evolved. As people talked about the collapse of the middle of retail, it sped up the demise of some, unfortunately, and the rise of others. So if we think about, let's call it a post-COVID bounce back or something similar, what do you think from a consumer point of view will matter for customers? What's changed in their mindset, in their way of thinking, buying in this horrible kind of 18-month period?
I think there's kind of the short and medium-term reactions to that. I think the short-term one is probably, and I talk about this in the big take back, this is a very much a I want my life back kind of thought. So in terms of recovery, we look at the values of recovery, and one of them is empowerment, this idea that I want to take control back again. Remember, most consumers have lost control of some of the simpler things in their lives, who they spend time with, where they go on vacation, what they buy, how they buy. A lot of these things have been taken away from us. So in the beginning of the pandemic, I spent a lot of time looking at the psychology of captivity, incarceration, kidnapping, slavery, things that, how the human mind reacts when your freedoms are taken away. And like we take freedom for granted, as do all our consumers, that we're free to make choices, free to shop where we want, when we want. And that was suddenly taken away. So I think there's a huge need for autonomy. So, I mean, look at the, I wrote a blog very early on, which I call the toilet paper apocalypse. It's a really good example. And we're 1 year on now. And even looking back only a year ago, it just sounds so comical when you talk about the toilet paper apocalypse. Those few weeks where we all bought toilet paper for no reason at all. I mean, the virus had nothing to do with your digestive system. And so it was really, from a survival and psychology point of view, it was about autonomy. It was about having some element of control. And so in moments of uncertainty, absolute uncertainty, you have nothing to do and you know where to turn. But you feel you have to do something. You have to, your body tells you, your mind tells you, I need to do something here to take control. And so, it just started off. Do you remember that one viral from Australia? It started off with those two ladies fighting over toilet roll. And from there, because of social media and various other factors, it just catapulted around the world. Toilet paper is quite a big product physically. So it doesn't take long to sell out from a physical shelf. And so then herding kicked in, monkey see, monkey do. Other people are buying it, I should too. And then add social media in there and bang, you've got a phenomenal global behavior. And that just, as a microcosm, was a really fascinating thing to watch. People struggling with complete uncertainty. I need to do something. And that something became toilet roll.
I remember walking around our local supermarket, and it was at that point when there was no pasta, no flour, because everybody was making bread, no toilet paper. I'm not sure everybody was on the toilet, but it stopped somewhere. And I thought it must have been a really good time as a buyer in a supermarket to walk around the store and think whatever's left is the stuff that we just need to get rid of. Yeah. We can't sell out in a pandemic.
Yeah, the easiest ranging exercise ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it was interesting. And to watch that uncertainty as a factor. So look at the UK. So the UK had a particularly poor example of that. So the supermarkets were really empty. And it wasn't so much about logistics. It was about that fear being struck into the heart of a population and them trying to take control. And that came about because of the inaction of the government there and Boris screwing things over. And so that wasn't as, for instance, we're your island cousin next door here in Ireland, and we didn't have those same reactions. That was very interesting because our government actually acted quite quickly. And so the fear, so you could actually draw a parallel between fear and uncertainty and behaviors, which of course you can always draw a parallel to. And so your opening question there is what's going to happen, you know, coming out of this. And so the yearning that consumers have for that control is really interesting. So anything that gives the consumer some feeling of control, some element of control, and they want their lives back. And so the short term is about me taking my life back. I've done everything the government has asked me. I've waited for the vaccines. I've done all those things that I felt I should do morally. Now it's me. So we're going to see a kind of a small swing away from the community spirit. We're all in this together towards a more indulgence. Okay, it's about me now. So if we're looking at retail hospitality, you know, there's a lovely intersection point there between, okay, well then indulge and come and indulge with us. So you need to position your brand and business as a conduit now to their fulfillment of desire. So I use that expression a lot these days. I mean, so how are people going to fulfill their desires over the next 6 and 12 months? Remember, there's billions of pounds of savings, literally billions stashed, and that's true globally. And so unlike previous kind of crises where, like coming out of the financial crisis, let's say 10, 12 years ago, people didn't have the money, that's not true this day. I mean, obviously there are people who have had very difficult COVID and who have lost a lot of money and have been furloughed, etc. But there are plenty others who have just been sitting on their savings, sitting on their income, unable to spend it, unable to travel. And so this money is all there. So for retail and hospitality to soak it up, this is important. It's important to get the message right, to get out there, to support the consumer on their recovery journey, to be a partner of that recovery, and to position yourself as a brand that can make that happen. I mean, one of the favorite campaigns I saw recently, and they got a lot of flack for it, was the Ryanair Jab and Go campaign. So, you know, and they were told that they were preying on this, the pandemic. I loved it. I think it's a perfect, perfect framing. I mean, it's cheeky because Ryanair's comms are always cheeky, but it is a perfect framing of where consumers' minds are. Consumers' minds are, as soon as I get this vaccine, I am going to Ibiza. You know, and that's where their minds are. And so there's no harm in a marketing communication reflecting that back at the consumer. And retail needs to do a better job at that, I think, and as does the hospitality industry. Of course, they're going to come and they're going to flood in the stores. But to hold them and to lengthen that type of empowerment, we need to really position the offering as, okay, look, we're here for you. Yeah, it's been tough. Come on, let's do this. Let's indulge. Let's enjoy ourselves. And so, yeah, there's a lot of optimism around the corner in terms of spending, in my mind, certainly the way the consumers are thinking.
And you talked about that being the short term. So where do you see the medium term? Does that big kind of euphoria and I'm bringing control back die off, or is it maintained in a different way?
Yes, it does die off because you kind of have this splash out of spending and this excitement. The medium term actual post-pandemic world is more about who we are as a people. What do we want? So we kind of start to lean into philosophical conversation. Who do I want to be with? Do I want to be in this marriage anymore? Or will I ask that guy or girl I'm going out with to marry me? Will I work in the same way? Do I want to work here? Will I work differently? And some big, big themes, like in terms of how we live our lives, where we live, who we live with, how we work. And those things are going to take some time, I think, and that's a bit of a crystal ball question because we don't actually know yet. But there definitely are going to be some ways of working that people are going to challenge. So as soon as, for instance, in retail, we talk about the big swing back to local digital. So this idea that there was still, despite the digital transformation journey that's been happening for 10 years in the world, the majority of businesses were still caught with their pants down, you know? And they still are. And still, like 12 months later, businesses are still struggling with the new digital reality. And I'll give you a really simple example. So Easter's coming up and I wanted to buy my 13-year-old daughter. She's big into clothes now at the moment, so I thought I'd give her a voucher for some online stores. Because it's a surprise, I went on and I Googled a few of the stores that she likes to use to buy a gift voucher. And of the 7 or 8 brands that are suitable for teenage girls, you know, Pretty Little Things and Boohoo and all these ones, only 3 of them had gift voucher links on their websites. And I'm thinking, hang on, like, you're a digital brand and I can't even buy a gift voucher for my daughter to download. I have to go into a store. But of course, the stores are closed right now. So like, and you're thinking, who's in charge here? Who's in charge of that business? You know? So it's fascinating to see large businesses still struggle with digital. But local, I think, is going to obviously enjoy a huge surge. People have now discovered local in a way that they hadn't before, and that those local businesses have now digitized quite strongly. And so retail, I think, is going to have a quite a nice bounce in terms of, you know, the large big brands that we know will stay in our hearts, but also the local brands that we've now discovered will, if they play it right, also stay. And I think the spend that we would have as consumers will be spread across a larger number of touch points, which can only be a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a really interesting example that, in terms of only 3 of them having been able to buy digital gift vouchers, you thought it would have been a given at any point, at any moment, pre or post or during pandemic.
Yeah.
Some lost sales there, clearly. And we've seen during the pandemic lots of innovation. I think you refer to it in one of your keynotes as reaction speed, or there's that realization of, I need to do something very quickly, very differently. So we work with brands that have thrown up online delivery or click and collect overnight. And it kind of puzzles me that it got to the point of a global pandemic for some retailers to lose the bureaucracy that gets in the way, that, you know, would take them 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months or even a year to do, to become agile and get on with it. Have you seen that come through, and do you think hopefully that stuff will be here to stay, or will just actually revert back to all the meetings and all the process that gets in the way of doing stuff quickly?
Yeah, I kind of think the second, unfortunately. I do think people did what they had to do to survive. It's that burning platform moment, back against the wall. The culture of retail, unfortunately, isn't great. Retail is a very process-driven, operationally driven business, and I think it suffers a huge amount from a lack of creativity, and only in times of peril like this did people do things to survive. And even you can see that 12 months later. I'm just releasing a new blog and a video literally tomorrow on the psychology of survival. And one of the most important things about survival is, you know, you can borrow from Dory in those Nemo movies, keep on swimming. You got to keep on going. And that's how people survive. It's how people, you know, it's how Jose Alejandro, he was a Salvadorian fisherman, was at sea for 14 months in a tiny little vessel floating around all on his own. 14 months, imagine that, catching seagulls by hand and drinking the blood of turtles, like, and harvesting rainwater. Imagine this mental strength you have to have. But the resolve of keep on going and just keep on going. And I think what businesses did in the first 3 or 4 months of the pandemic was they did the survival stuff, and they did what had to be done. And then what happened is nothing. And that's the problem. From then on, they kind of did give up. They kind of thought, ah, we'll just wait today. And because of all these false dawns, first lockdown, second lockdown, third lockdown, the kind of people got, particularly in hospitality, people just got tired of trying and reopening. And so they kind of gave up. And at the moment, they're kind of just, okay, well, we'll just wait until whatever, June 21st, isn't it, in the UK, or whatever the data is. Let's just wait. And they've stopped innovating. They've stopped challenging business models. They've stopped keeping an eye on what consumers want. And that's a really dangerous place. So in Everest, there's something called the death zone. And it's around 8,000 meters. And, you know, oxygen is extremely thin at the top. And the death zone is famous for, and thus called, if you stop and you have a little sit down, a little rest maybe, you never get back up again. So that it's the space where you just have to keep going. You have to put one foot in front of the other continuously. Because if you stop, even for 10 or 15 seconds, the thinness of the air just takes you over, and your body just goes into what they call give-up-itis. And you literally just think, oh, do you know what? You actually accept death more than the difficulty of walking on. It feels like a nice, cozier space to sleep down. So, like, yeah, I know I'm going to die, but look, it's fine. So your brain starts. It's kind of like the same thing you get when you're subaqua diving. You know, the bends. You kind of stop thinking. Yeah. Stop thinking straight. And the problem with that is that people don't even help each other, because if you stop to help someone, you will also die. And so there's bodies all over the death zone that are still there because they can't be choppered down. And I think in business, that's where we are right now. We're in that death zone. And people are getting a little bit comfortable. and they're having a little sit down and they're saying, ah, look, we'll just wait till the vaccine rollout finishes, or we'll wait and see what happens, wait to see what our competitors do. And that's you've stopped moving. And if you stop moving, you are going to die. And so it is, it's hard. I know that it's 12 months of a pandemic, but this is actually the moment where you actually have to sit down and think, okay, what else can we challenge? What else can we, how else can we engage? How, because consumers are tired too. So maybe we can find new ways of engaging with consumers, more exciting ways, different ways, keep things fresh for the consumers, because the consumers are also bored of the same online interfaces. They're bored of waiting. And so any business that brings anything new to market now is bringing it into a place that is really accepting of new, you know? And so, yeah, I would challenge people, if you're running a brand, a business, if it's a small one or a large one, to now is the time to whip your team into a frenzy about, okay, look, you know, we need to get ready for this big take back. We need to be strong. We need to keep going. We need to be fresh. We need to be showing our customers and consumers that we are here for them on this recovery journey. And in fact, we're going to lead it. We're going to pack the backpack for them. So there's a lot of jadedness creeping into the way we're running, a lot of jadedness creeping into leadership as well. So people who are leading teams are kind of, they did a great job for the first few months, and now they're kind of sick of it. They're kind of, you know, want everything to go back to normal. But my challenge to that is, this is the time as a leader where you're going to define your leadership role. You know, it's easy to lead in regular normal times. The challenge for leadership is dealing in times of adversity.
So this give up-itis then, is this the point when we do move away from transactional retail? It's been muted for years, and there's, you know, whole experiential plays and people setting up concept stores that really never drive through into the rest of the chain. Is this the point? Is this the point of no return, in terms of it can't just be transactional? It's about relevancy. It's about, you talk about personalization and experiential value rather than transactional value. Is this the point where it's got to happen? Otherwise you might as well give up.
Yeah, I think so. It's one of those trends that we've been watching for many years that has been step jumped because of the pandemic. So experiential equity, we talked about that replacing brand equity for a long time. People measured their brand equity, measured how much people spoke about their brand. But your brand doesn't matter. People only want experiences. They want to share experiences. They want to have memorable experiences. That was true before the pandemic. Look at anyone's social media feed. It's about who they are defined as. Look at who I am, who I'm with, what I'm doing. It's not so much what I own. So we've gone away from a materialistic society. So if you're going to have an experiential equity, I mean, look at everybody right now post-pandemic. They don't want things. No one wants things. People want to physically go places. They want to have experiences. There's a huge lack of Google photographs in terms of memory. So if you open your Google Pics and you go to 1 year ago, now what you're looking at is, here I am in my house. Here I am in my house 1 year ago. So people lived off those memories for the last year, looking at what I did this time last year. But now that we've caught up on ourselves and we've gone the full year round, I mean, basically, we define, we look at memory based on experience. Think about any memories you have. They don't necessarily be, oh, do you remember the time I bought that? It'll be always, oh, do you remember the time someone did this, or I was here, I did that. So they're all experiential, because memory is generally banked through emotional experience. So you have an emotional reaction somewhere in your body, and that's what helps kind of chemicalize and bank the memory. And so in retail, we have to engage our customers emotionally. They have to feel something when they've had the experience. And if we're going to hope that they go out and from a modern marketing point of view, of course, the peer-to-peer economy is what we need to activate. So we need them out there talking about our brand, talking about our business, if we're going to bring our business to life. I always think it's a bit like Frankenstein. You can put all the pieces in place physically and stitch it all together. But that jolt of electricity that brings it all to life is the peer-to-peer conversations that your consumers are having about you. Now, why would they have any conversation about you unless there's an experience to talk about and an emotional engagement of some sort? So yes, I think previously experience was kind of hived off as the concept store. Let's do this a little bit. Let maybe get a viral out of it. Whereas now I think experience across the whole customer journey, not just customer service experience, but actual, you know, product service experience, post product service experience, every element of that customer journey needs to be strongly emotional, strongly experiential, if we're going to have some kind of traction to the consumer. Because you're right, post pandemic now, people want it to matter. They want to bank a memory from this. And that doesn't happen if you stroll into a store and have a transaction, or go on digital and have a transaction. And a lot of digital can be quite two-dimensional, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And does that mean that brands, back to our previous point around during the first part of the pandemic, they were agile, they were doing things that have been on their roadmap and agenda for months and managed to do it in days. Does that mean that they're going to have to be far more accepting of the fan of the fact they've got to pivot and do something different. They may have a collaboration with somebody outside of their sphere that they never thought they would, because it's relevant to their customer needs and audience.
I think so. I think you need to challenge yourself if you own a business or a brand to ask yourself the question every day: how did I make a customer smile or feel something today? Like, by everything you do. Because if you're not doing new things all the time to make those people tell the stories in the peer-to-peer economy, why would I tell a story that's the same last week? And then, you know, we've all been telling the same stories over the last year of each other anyway. Yeah. Because you can see, so we want to be able to tell new stories. Now, I don't get to tell new stories unless your brand or business is doing new things. So yeah, the energy that it takes to keep that experiential kind of, I mean, in retail, I suppose we do quite well on promotional calendars, don't we? We kind of say, okay, let's do a promotional calendar. We pick off seasonal events and we do lots of activity around them. And we need to get used to doing that no matter what brand or business, even if it's B2B as well, by the way, in terms of having something new to say every month to the consumers, new things to look at, new ways of engaging. And you need to encourage that element of creativity. One of the problems with retail and hospitality is we tend to recruit the same type of person again and again and again. And that's an issue. It's a creativity issue, because we need to think about recruiting maybe outside our familiar, outside our culture, and getting far more creative in the way we engage with consumers, and less operational, less process driven, and less bogged down in the detail, and just throw mud at the wall, you know. And so, yeah, some of it won't work, some of it will. Even the failures can get viral conversations going. And so it's a case of just be doing something, you know, be seen to be doing something, and linking in with, you know, relevant values that will always change. By the way, the values of consumers will shift all the time. And that gives you opportunity all the time to think, okay, how can we link in with these new values? So most of my work is to do with teaching brands and businesses, you know, what the current values are of this quarter or of this year or what's happening, and then how to kind of reflect those values back at their consumer or customer base.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, that whole promotional cycle you talked about. Nobody's really broken the mold. Clearly fashion follows a cycle of seasons, but outside of that, I mean, my background is health and beauty and in DIY as well. And there was a really structured, you know, you come out of Christmas and you go into storage in DIY and loft insulation, then you come out of that into Easter, so barbecues, garden furniture. But it was relatively cookie cutter. You could put your pounds, your mortgage on what was coming in the storage event or in the Easter event. So there's massive opportunity with what's available in the world today for innovation, even within those parameters, to keep it relevant, make it different. Again, health and beauty, and you'd come out of one season, you'd go into be interested in this season, sun care, because everybody was going away on holiday. So again, needs to be some innovation in that area, because we might not all be going abroad this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, innovation doesn't have to be. I think people often get trapped in the word innovation. They think it's something huge. You know, if you ask people what's innovation, they always kind of think about Steve Jobs and, oh my God, the iPod and the iPhone and these mad things that came out of nowhere. Innovation really is about just connecting in a new way. Sometimes it can be a current product, current service with a new need. Innovation can be very simple. I mean, one of my favorite ones coming out of the pandemic was a little animal sanctuary in California called Sweet Farm. So the same problem that faced Sweet Farm faced every single zoo in the world. They had all the costs of the asset and the animals and the vet fees, but no income, no ability for people to come through and pay at the ticket style. And so what do you do when you have all the costs but no income? And so they sat back a small, they only have 120, 130 little animals. Usual school tourers would come and look at them, and that was their income. And they thought, well, what's happening in the world right now? And what do we have, and how can we put those two things together? So they launched this product called, I'm sure you're familiar with GoToMeeting as a platform.
Yeah.
They launched GoToMeeting, where for $65, you could dial in a live alpaca or goat into your Zoom meeting. So you'd be in the middle of your meeting, they'd be meh, and they'd be this live. And so they had their staff going around with tablets and phones around the paddocks. And for that money, you could have a live alpaca for 10 minutes in your meeting. And it just took off because people were so bored, obviously Zoom fatigue and business meetings and social meetings. And they had to hire more staff to walk around with phones and tablets. And before they knew it, they were making more money out of that product than they ever had made on ticket sales. And so this idea that, you know, you can take an asset and spin it off in a different direction. It takes a challenge. It takes you to kind of think about new ways of doing things. And then you think back, why weren't I doing this before? Well, it's because people weren't spending all their life on Zoom before. And so that's a very simple innovation that may stay with them for a while now, or maybe they won't, doesn't matter. But that style of thinking is what you need to get to. In fact, there was a restaurant here around the corner from me here, and they're quite a kind of a high-end restaurant. They were open at 8 o'clock every evening, 6 days a week. That's all they did. Obviously, when the pandemic closed them, they went to takeaway. Now, that's not exactly an innovative pivot, is it? That's an obvious pivot. But what they also started to do when they were delivering takeaway, because they had kind of five or six really popular items in the menu, they started to deliver those items raw as well. So there was a little leaflet saying, look, if you like this, you can cook it yourself. Just ask us and we'll deliver the raw ingredients and you can cook it yourself. And then they started doing that. So now they have three products. They have a restaurant, which will, you know, have a kitchen serving it from 8 p.m. They have a takeaway business, but they also have a business where they prepare raw foods and put them into stores locally and deliver to home, like a subscription meal business. And that will stay post-pandemic. So they had a kitchen that they weren't utilizing in terms of asset for about 4 or 5 hours, 6 hours a day. But now they utilize it from the morning because they're prepping all that stuff. It goes out by 2 or 3 p.m. And then they switch their focus over to takeaway. And then so that's the kind of innovation that was forced in the pandemic, but hopefully will stay with people. And that's the type of thinking. How do you have innovative thinking when there isn't the burning platform of a pandemic standing underneath you? How do you keep that innovation style and thoughts in the teams that you have without the fear of, oh, if we don't do this, we'll actually be dead? But actually, if you don't innovate and keep changing and keep moving like little Dory, keep on swimming, you will be dead. Because, you know, choosing to stand still, Lauren Bacall, an American actress, she was married to Humphrey Bogart. She had a wonderful expression, and it was, you know, standing still in a rapidly changing world means you move backwards. So just because you're standing still, you think you're standing still waiting this pandemic out, because the environment around you is changing so fast, you're actually moving backwards. You know, the environment around you is shifting. So you think you're standing still, but you're not, you're going backwards. So you have no choice but to kind of strongly keep on moving forwards.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought, isn't it? And I suspect back to our experiential part of the conversation earlier, that those people that have been on those Zoom meetings with the alpaca, that's the one they remember from all the hundreds that they've been on in the last 12 to 18 months.
Absolutely, yeah. And all you need to do in retail and hospitality is give people a story to tell. I'm big into storytelling. And so, you know, the power of stories is amazing. And so people, when they listen to this podcast, for instance, they won't remember most of the things I said. But maybe that the one thing they'll remember is the go to meeting example. So because it's a story, and people think, oh, I remember those stories. Yeah. And so people like stories, and they might remember the guy catching the sea turtles and seagulls and drinking their blood. You know, people remember stories. Yeah. They tend not to remember facts and figures and where I bought something. And how many times have you watched an ad on TV and then someone asks you what it's for? And you go, I don't know, actually, it's a very good ad though. You know, so they don't remember facts, but people will always remember stories, because stories again trigger emotional response, involvement, and that's what we all want. We all want to build brand advocacy and brand involvement. So the only way to do that is to give people stories to tell, to bring our brand to life in that peer-to-peer economy as they tell our story.
Excellent. So at a headline level then, if and hopefully it doesn't happen, we enter another lockdown, how do you think people will feel? How will that affect the whole retail piece again? Will they have to go hard and go again, or will it just be everybody just relaxing and we'll have give up itis even more?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the compliance fatigue is very interesting to watch right now. And governments are really hard, starting to struggle with that. We're trying to make people compliant, and whatever rule they set, the society does, you know, rule plus two anyway. I think retail is running out of steam and struggle, I think. And so, and particularly hospitality is waiting to be reopened. I think now is the time to accelerate whatever you're doing. And if you're not doing anything, to pick yourself up off the ground and dust yourself off. I recommend a lot of books to people at the moment. I'm making people watch movies about survival. So, you know, you should watch Alive, the Uruguayan rugby team who crash into the Andes and eat each other. You should watch 172 Hours, the guy who's arm gets trapped under that boulder and he spends 7 days and ends up chopping his own arm off. You should watch Touching the Void or read the book, Joe Simpson's book about his accident on the mountain and having a broken leg and falling down a crevasse. And, you know, people who have survived stuff, and even the 438 Days, the other book about that guy, that fisherman, afloat for 14 months. those things give us inspiration because they are the people that actually make a difference, and they have some kind of characteristics that we think, oh, wow, these are the people that, you know, they need that kind of drive. And they have adaptability and resilience and hope and intuition and flow and all the, you know, there's 10 key characteristics. Subscribe to my newsletter if you want the rest of them, kenhughes.info. I think if we're entering another phase of that, we really start to need to lead our teams with this sense of survival, because then we're into that kind of real survival piece where most people will die. Most people will survive the first few parts of a disaster, but it's that last part, that last few weeks, few months, few days, that people actually just enter that kebabitis area zone, that death zone. So, you know, now is the time as a leader that you really want to encourage your teams to bring it, to get more creative, get more innovative. So yeah, I'd get them to watch those movies, read those books, any book. There's a book, Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, His Survival of the Holocaust, Brian Keenan's Evil Cradling. He was 4.5 years kept as a terrorist hostage. You know, there's loads of books about survival. You can put them on the show notes, people should read a few of them and watch a few of the movies and just get that feeling of, you know what, this is it. This is the moment that we're going to define the future of the business. Not in the first few months where we all had to change, but now when few are changing, the ones that actually put the effort in now will succeed.
Brilliant. Some good advice there. And as you say, yeah, we'll put links to those books on the show notes. So to wrap up, Ken, final question from me. What's the best bit of business advice you've ever been given?
Best piece that I've ever been given? Humanity, I think. I think a lot of business focuses on the numbers, the operation, the money, the stakeholders. I think because I'm a social scientist, I'm always fascinated by humanity anyway and humans. So keeping things human and empathetic. So I've really enjoyed the pandemic for that, the empathy and the compassion that people have been able to show each other, business to business compassion, that commerce lent into compassionate commerce as opposed to commercial realities. So I think, yeah, to me, it was always about people, about humanity. And if you get your why right, you know, that Simon Sinek's why, if the why should never be money, should never be market share, should never be greed, should never be status or ego. It should always be about what's best for humanity and people. And if you get that right, you get relevance right. And if you get relevance right, the profit follows, you know.
Amazing, amazing. So if people want to find out more about you, Ken, or get in touch to talk about how you can work with them, where's the best place for them to reach out to you?
Best place is my website, kenhughes.info. On social media, it's kenhughes, H-U-G-H-E-S-I-E, which stands for Ireland, because I'm Irish. You'll find me at all the usual places, Instagram, Pinterest. I don't think I have a Pinterest. I think I abandoned that. I just got bored. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. The YouTube channel is there. I mean, if you want to look at the content, the YouTube channel is probably the best. And then I have a blog on Ken Hughes Info, which you can subscribe to and get a monthly newsletter. And so, yeah, it's lots and lots of content up there. If you're interested in the psychology of consumerism, the psychology of society and how we react, it's a blend of social anthropology, cyber behaviorism, behavior economics, psychology, sociology, all that good stuff.
Yeah, brilliant. And there's also info on your foundation on there as well. Do you want to give us a quick kind of 30-second snapshot of what you're trying to achieve?
There is. The Cage Foundation is basically just building a longer table. You know, that idea of if you're lucky enough in life, you shouldn't direct a larger fence. You should build a longer table. So every year we donate about 5% of revenues to a cause. That cause changes every year. So we did breast cancer. We've done, we sent some clowns to refugee camps a couple of years ago. We built a school in Africa in 2019. And this year we're investing in paralysis cures this year with the foundation. So yeah, every year we change kind of our focus basically to give back. It's part of my why. Every time I go on screen to perform, or every go I step on a stage to perform, 5% of that revenue goes to that foundation. So it kind of drives me forward as well.
Amazing. Hats off to you for that. I really admire that. Brilliant. So Ken, it's been an absolute pleasure, this one. Really enjoyed it. Say I'd recommend anybody get on the YouTube channel, subscribe to Ken's newsletter, read the blogs. I always find something to take out, either makes me smile and makes me think, which I think are amazing things to be able to get through to people. Appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man, and thank you once again, Ken.
No, you're very welcome, Simon. Have a great day, pal.